The average ego in his causal body may be compared to the chicken within the egg. The chicken being, page 168, entirely unconscious of the source of the heat, which nevertheless stimulates its growth. When an ego reaches the stage where he breaks through his shell, and becomes capable of some sort of response, the whole process takes on a different form, and is enormously quickened. The awakening process is greatly helped by the masters of wisdom, who pour out their spiritual force like sunlight, flooding the entire plane, and affecting to some extent everything within its radius. As mentioned in Chapter 21, even the group souls of, page 253, animals on the lower mental plane are greatly affected and assisted by this influence. It is on the mental plane that much of the most important work of the masters is done. This is more especially the case upon the causal plane, where the individuality, or ego, can be acted upon directly. It is from this plane that they shower the grandest spiritual influences upon the world of thought. From it, they impel great and beneficial movements of all kinds. Here, again, much of the spiritual force poured out by the glorious self-sacrifice of the Nirmanakayas is distributed. Here also direct teaching is given to those pupils who are sufficiently advanced to receive it in this way, since it can be imparted far more readily and completely here than on the lower planes. With a developed man, the ego is fully awake. In course of time the ego discovers that there are a good many things which he can do, and, when this happens, he may rise into a condition in which he has a definite life on his own plane, though in many cases it is even then but dreamy. The ego of the ordinary person, as we have seen, has rather a vegetable consciousness or life, and seems to be only just aware of other egos. But, as the ego becomes sufficiently developed, he can not only help other egos, but lives a life of his own among his peers, among the great Arupadevas, among all kinds of splendid angels or devas. The young ego is probably but little awake, as yet, to all that glorious life, just as a baby in arms knows little of the interests of the world surrounding him. But, as his consciousness gradually unfolds, he awakens to all this magnificence, and becomes fascinated by its vividness and beauty. Such a developed ego enjoys the companionship of all the brightest intellects that the world has ever produced, including, as said, the deva or angel kingdom as well as the human. The life of the ego on his own plane is glorious beyond any conception possible to the personality. If one could imagine an existence in the company of the great men of the world, artists, poets, page 254, scientists, and even the masters themselves, and add to all that an understanding unattainable down here, then only would one begin to have some idea of the life of the ego. The personality would not, of course, know what the ego does, unless the personality and ego have been unified. Thus, the ego may know the master, while the personality does not. The ego must have been fully conscious and active on his own plane for a long time before any knowledge of that existence can come through into his physical life. Page 169. This ego consciousness must not be confused with the consciousness which comes from the unification of the higher and lower selves, mentioned in Chapter 26. When unification has been achieved, the man's consciousness resides in the ego all the time, and from the ego it plays through whatever vehicle he may happen to be using. But, in the case of a man who has not yet achieved that union, the consciousness of the ego on his own plane comes into activity only when he is no longer hampered by any lower vehicles, and exists only until he puts himself down into incarnation, for as soon as he takes up a lower body, his consciousness can manifest for the time only through that body. The causal plane is the true and relatively permanent home of the ego, for here he is free of the limitations of the personality, and is simply himself, the reincarnating entity. Although his consciousness may be dim, dreamily unobservant, and scarcely awake, yet his vision is true, however limited it may be. Not only is he free from the illusions of the personality, and the refracting medium of the lower self, but thought itself no longer assumes the same limited forms which it takes upon itself, at levels below the causal. In some of the older literature, there are statements which seem to imply that the higher ego needs no evolution, being already perfect and godlike on his own plane. Whatever such expressions are used, whatever may be the terminology employed, they must be taken to apply only to that Ma, the true God within man, page 255, which is certainly far beyond the necessity of any kind of evolution of which we can know anything. Again, H. P. Blavatsky states that Manas, or the higher ego, as part of the universal mind, is unconditionally omniscient on its own plane. The meaning, of course, is that this is so only when it has fully developed self-consciousness, by its evolutionary experiences, and is the vehicle of all knowledge of the past and present and future. The reincarnating ego most undoubtedly does evolve, as is perfectly evident to those who possess causal sight. At first, he has very little active power on any plane, and it is his purpose to become fully active on all planes, even the physical. An ego who is awakened, and is truly alive upon his own plane, is a glorious object, giving us for the first time some idea of what man is intended to be. Such developed egos are still separate, yet intellectually they fully realize their inner unity, for they see one another as they are, and can no longer blunder, or fail to comprehend. It is not easy to explain, in physical words, the differences which exist between egos, since all of them are in many ways much greater than anything to which we are accustomed down here. Some faint reflection of the impression, produced by intercourse with them, may be conveyed by saying that an advanced ego reminds one of a dignified, stately and most courteous ambassador, full of wisdom and kindliness, while the less developed man has more of the type of the bluff, hearty, country squire. An ego who is already on the path, and is nearing adeptship, has much in common with the great angels, and radiates spiritual influences of prodigious power. Page 170. It is, therefore, not to be wondered at that the ego throws himself energetically into the whirl of intense activity on his own plane, and that it seems to him immensely more important and interesting than the faint, far distant struggles of a cramped and half-formed personality, veiled in the dense obscurity of the lower world. Page 256. One ego has been described by a person who saw him as a radiant youth, like a Greek Apollo carved out of glistening marble, and yet immaterial, with inspiration as his keynote. Another ego appeared somewhat like the sculpture of Demeter in the British Museum, a dignified, serene and peaceful figure, brooding as it were over the world which he helped to foster and protect. Thus every ego has his own radiantly beautiful appearance, expressing his particular mission or genius. Among such beings, thoughts no longer take form and float about as they do at lower levels, but pass like lightning flashes from one to another. Here we are face to face with the enduring body of the ego, a body older than the hills, an actual expression of the divine glory which ever rests behind it, and shines through it more and more in the gradual unfolding of its powers. Here we deal no longer with outer forms, but we see the things in themselves, the reality which lies behind the imperfect expression. Here cause and effect are one, clearly visible in their unity, like two sides of the same coin. Here we have left the concrete for the abstract, we no longer have the multiplicity of forms, but the idea which lies behind all those forms. The ego, on his own plane, is able to perceive with absolute instantaneity, without, of course, the use of nerves. Hence arises a certain class of dream, where a man is awakened from sleep by a physical sound or touch. In the minute space of time, between the impact and awakening of the man, the ego will often compose a kind of drama, or series of scenes, leading up to and culminating in the event which awakens the physical body. This habit, however, seems to be peculiar to the ego which, as far as spirituality is concerned, is still comparatively undeveloped. As the ego develops, and comes to understand his position and his responsibilities, he rises beyond these graceful sports of his childhood. It seems that, just as primitive man casts every natural phenomenon into the form of a myth, so the primitive ego dramatizes every event that comes under his notice. Page 257. But the man who has attained full consciousness finds himself so fully occupied in the work of the higher planes that he devotes no energy to such matters, and therefore dreams no more in this fashion. The use of symbols seems to be a characteristic of the ego, when out of the body during sleep, that is to say, that what in the physical world would be an idea, requiring many words to express, is perfectly conveyed to the ego by a single symbolical image. When such a thought is remembered in the physical brain, unless its key is recollected, there is likely to be confusion. The activities of the ego on his own plane thus sometimes give rise to another class of dream, but there are, of course, many other causes of dreams, vide the astral body, page 93. The ego on his own plane uses abstractions just as we on the physical plane deal with concrete facts. On his plane, the essence of everything is available. He is no longer concerned with details, he need no longer talk round a subject or endeavor to explain it. He takes up the essence or the idea of a subject and moves it as a whole, as one moves a piece when playing chess. His world is a world of realities, page 171, where not only is deception impossible, but also unthinkable. He no longer deals with emotions, ideas, or conceptions, but with the thing in itself. It is impossible to express in words the ordinary traffic between men in fully developed causal bodies. What down here would be a system of philosophy, needing many volumes to explain it. Is there a single definite object of thought which can be thrown down as one throws a card upon a table? An opera or an oratorio, which here would occupy a full orchestra for many hours in the rendering, is there a single mighty chord? The methods of a whole school of painting are condensed into one magnificent idea, and ideas such as these are the intellectual counters, which are used by egos in their converse with one with another. On this plane, as we have said previously, page 258, the ego has fully unrolled before him all the lives he has lived on this globe, the actual living records of the past. He sees his lives as one vast whole, of which his descents into incarnation have been but the passing days. He sees the karmic causes which have made him what he is. He sees what karma still lies in front of him, to be worked out before the long sad count is closed, and thus he realizes, with unerring certainty, his exact place in evolution. Here he perceives the great scheme of evolution, and what is the divine will for him. When dealing with matters on his own plane, and those below him, all the ideas of the ego are complete ideas, properly rounded off and perfect. Furthermore, anything incomplete would be to him unsatisfactory, would, in fact, hardly be counted as an idea at all. For him a cause includes its effect, and therefore, in the longer view which he is able to take, poetic justice is always done, and no story can ever end badly. These characteristics of his reflect themselves to a certain extent in his lower vehicles, and we find them appearing in ourselves in various ways. Thus, children always demand that fairy tales shall end well, that virtue be rewarded, and that vice shall be vanquished, and all unsophisticated and healthy-minded people feel a similar desire. Those who clamor for an evil realism are precisely those whose views of life have become unhealthy and unnatural, because, in their short-sighted philosophy, they can never see the whole of any incident, but only the fragment of it which shows in one incarnation, and usually only the merest outside husk even of that. In the fourth root race, which is concerned chiefly with the development of the astral body and its emotions, this characteristic of rounding off stories, and exaggeration, is often very marked. This is clearly seen, for example, in old Celtic stories. The desire for scientific accuracy and truth is comparatively a recent development, and belongs more specifically to the fifth root race, which is concerned principally, page 259, with the development of mind and the mental body. Fifth race people thus demand first that a thing shall be true, otherwise it is of little interest to them. The old races, on the other hand, demand first of all that it shall be pleasing, and decline to be limited in their appreciation by any such consideration as whether the thing had ever materialized, or could ever materialize, on the physical plane. Page 172. The desire for accuracy is thus the coming through of another quality of the ego, of his power to see truly, to see a thing as it is, as a whole and not only in part. Understanding this, we should clearly encourage and insist on the quality of accuracy, and keep our record of facts distinct from our thoughts and desires with regards to those facts. Yet, in cultivating truthfulness, there is no need to extinguish romance. It is necessary to be accurate, it is not necessary to be a grad grind. We need not lose sight of the beauty and romance which lie behind things, merely because we have acquired a scientific knowledge of details, many of which may be arid and superficial. Thus, sugar does not cease to be sweet and pleasant to the taste because we have learned that its chemical formula is C12H20O11. The ego's measure of time and space is so entirely different from that which we use in waking life, that from our point of view it seems as though neither time nor space existed for him. Events which, on the physical plane, take place in succession, appear on the mental plane to be occurring simultaneously, and at the same point. That, at least, is the effect on the consciousness of the ego, though it appears probable that absolute simultaneity is the attribute of a still higher plane, and that the sensation of it on the mental plane is simply the result of a succession, so rapid that the infinitesimally minute spaces of time are indistinguishable. Just as the eye receives the impression of a continuous ring of fire, if a stick with one end burning, is whirled round rapidly. The reason for this, of course, is that page 260, the human eye is not able to distinguish, as separate, similar impressions which follow one another at intervals of less than about a tenth part of a second. Particular examples of what we may call the immense speed, at which the consciousness of the ego operates on its own plane, may be found in Dreams by C.W. Leadbeater, pages 36-40, where a number of dreams dependent on this phenomenon are recounted and explained. A result, which follows from the ego's supernormal method of time measurement, is that in some degree prevision is possible to him. If he knows how to read them, the present, the past, and to a certain extent the future lie, is open before him. He undoubtedly thus foresees, occasionally, events that will be of interest or importance to the lower personality, and makes more or less successful endeavors to impress them upon it. Man undoubtedly possesses free will, hence prevision is possible only to a certain extent. In the case of the ordinary man, it is probably possible to a very large extent, since the man has developed no will of his own worth speaking of, and is consequently very largely the creature of circumstances. His karma places him amid certain surroundings, and their action upon him is so much the most important factor in his history, that his future course may be foreseen with almost mathematical certainty. When we consider the vast number of events which can be but little affected by human action, and also the complex and wide-spreading relation of causes to their effects, it should not seem wonderful to us that, on the plane where the result of all causes at present in action is visible, a very large portion of the future may be foretold with considerable accuracy, even as to detail. That this can be done, has been, page 173, proved again and again, not only by prophetic dreams, but by the second sight of the Highlanders, and the predictions of clairvoyance, and it is on the forecasting of effects, from the causes already in existence, that the scheme of astrology is largely based. Page 261. When, however, we come to deal with a developed man, then prophecy fails us, for he is no longer the creature of circumstances, but to a great extent their master. The main events of his life may certainly be arranged beforehand, by his past karma, but the way in which he will allow them to affect him, the method by which he will deal with them, and perhaps triumph over them, these are his own, and they cannot be foreseen, except as probabilities. Such actions of his, in their turn, becomes causes, and thus there are produced, in his life chains of effect which were not provided for by the original arrangement, and, therefore, could not have been foretold with any exactitude. We may say, therefore, that the course of the ordinary undeveloped man, who has practically no will of his own worth speaking of, may often be foreseen clearly enough, but, when the ego boldly takes his future in his own hands, exact prevision becomes impossible. An ego, who is at all developed, will meditate upon his own level, such meditation not necessarily synchronizing with any meditation that the personality may be performing. The yoga of a fairly well-developed ego is to try to raise his consciousness, first into the Buddhic plane, and then through its various stages. This he does, without reference to what the personality may be doing at the time. Such an ego would probably also send down a little of himself at the personal meditation, though his own meditations are very different. It should ever be remembered that the ego is not manas or mind only, but the spiritual triad of Atma Buddhi manas. At our present stage of consciousness, the ego rests in the causal body on the higher mental plane. But, as he develops, his consciousness will be centered on the Buddhic plane. Later still, when he attains adeptship, it will be centered on the plane of Ma. But it is not to be supposed that when this further development takes place, the manas is in any way lost. 4, page 262, when the ego draws himself up into the Buddhic plane, he draws up manas with him, into that expression of manas which has all the time existed on the Buddhic plane, but has not been fully vivified until now. Similarly, when he draws himself up into the plane of Ma, manas and Buddhi exist within him, just as fully as ever, so that now the triple spirit is in full manifestation, on its own plane, in all three aspects. The spirit is, therefore, truly sevenfold, for he is triple on his own plane, that of Ma, dual on the Buddhic, and single on the mental, the unity which is his synthesis making seven. Thus, though he draws himself into the higher, he retains the definiteness on the lower. What has been stated to be the clearest and best description of the human trinity, Atma Buddhi Manas, is to be found in the Key to Theosophy by H.P. Blavatsky, page 174. The higher self is Ma, the inseparable ray of the universal and one self. It is the God above more than within us. Happy the man who succeeds in saturating his inner ego with it. The spiritual divine ego is the spiritual soul, or Buddhi, in close union with Manas, the mind principle, without which it is no ego at all, but only the atmic vehicle. The inner or higher ego is Manas, the fifth principle, so called, independently of Buddhi. The mind principle is the spiritual ego only when merged into one with Buddhi. It is the permanent individuality, or the reincarnating ego. The Key to Theosophy, pages 175-176. As soon as an ego becomes at least partially conscious of his surroundings and other egos, he leads a life, and has interests and activities, on his own plane. But even then we must remember, as we have seen in earlier chapters, that he puts down into the personality only a very small part of himself, and that that part constantly becomes entangled in interests which, because they are so partial, are often along lines different, page 263, from the general activities of the ego himself, who consequently does not pay any particular attention to the lower life of the personality unless something rather unusual happens to it. When this stage is reached, the ego usually comes under the influence of a master. In fact, often his first clear consciousness of anything outside himself is his touch with that master. The tremendous power of the master's influence magnetizes him, draws his vibrations into harmony with its own, and multiplies manyfold the rate of his development. It rays upon him like sunshine upon a flower, and he evolves rapidly under its influence. This is why, while the earlier stages of progress are so slow as to be almost imperceptible, when the master turns his attention upon the man, develops him, and arouses his own will to take part in the work, the speed of his advancement increases in geometrical progression. In the chapters on Devachan, we saw that an ego, who is much loved by many people, may have part in many heavens simultaneously, ensouling the thought images which his friends make of him. These images are, of course, of great evolutionary benefit to the ego concerned, affording him additional opportunities of developing qualities, such, for example, as affection. This is clearly the direct result and reward of those lovable qualities, which draw towards the man the affectionate regard of so many of his fellow men. Occasionally the action of such a force upon the ego of a surviving friend may manifest even in the personality of that friend upon the physical plane. For, while the action is upon the ego, through the special thought image, yet the personality of the surviving friend is a manifestation of that same ego, and, if the ego be considerably modified, it is at least possible that that modification may show itself in the physical manifestation on this lower plane. It is obvious, however, that there are two possible limitations to the perfection of the intercourse between the ego concerned, and those who make images of him. Page 264. First, the image may be partial and imperfect, so that many of the higher qualities of the ego may not be represented, and may therefore be unable to show themselves through it. Page 175. Secondly, it is just possible that the ego is not in reality, so to speak, as good as the image which has been made of him, so that he is unable to fill it completely. This, however, is unlikely to occur, and could take place only when a quite unworthy object had been unwisely idolized. These aspects of the matter have, however, been fully dealt with in the mental body, pages 197-198. The more highly the ego is developed, the more fully is he able to express himself through the thought images, these becoming steadily fuller expressions of himself. When he gains the level of a master, he consciously employs them as a means of helping and instructing his pupils. To assist the student in obtaining a thoroughly clear grasp of the mechanism and results of thought images in Divachan, diagrams 36 and 37 are appended. Diagram 36 illustrates an ego X, in his mental body X, in Divachan, surrounded by thought images A, B, C, D, E, and F of his six friends A, B, C, D, E, and F respectively. Of these, A and F are also in Divachan, in their respective mental bodies A and F, B and E are on the astral plane, in their respective astral bodies B and E, C and D are still alive in the physical world in their physical bodies C and D. The diagram shows that the thought images, made by X, of his six friends, are ensouled by, and therefore directly connected with, the egos A, B, C, D, E and F. Not with the personal expressions, page 265, of those egos, whether those personal expressions be on the physical, astral or mental planes. It is also clear from the diagram that the personalities A, B, C, etc., can know nothing of what is happening through the thought images A, B, C, etc., except through their own egos A, B, C, etc. Diagram 37 illustrates for egos A, B, C and D, all mutual friends, A, B, and C being in Divachan, whilst D is still in his physical body. Each of A, B and C makes a thought image of each of his three friends, these images being, page 176, ensouled by their respective egos. A, B and C each possess three expressions of themselves, one through their own mental bodies, and two through the thought images in the Divachan of the others. D, on the other hand, possesses four expressions of himself, one through his own physical personality, and three more through the thought images which his three friends have made of him. An understanding of the way in which an ego can appear simultaneously in the Divachanic images of a number of people, as well, of course, as other phenomena of the ego world, shows that, in order to go from one place to another, traveling is not necessary for the ego. In the mental body, page 236, we describe the cord of a man, and explained how this cord is used to find a man, wherever in the three worlds he may be. That cord consists of his own note, page 266, and those of the three lower vehicles, mental, astral and physical. If the man has none of these lower vehicles at the time, the same mechanism holds good, for the causal body has always attached to it the mental unit, and the astral and physical permanent atoms, these being quite sufficient to give out the distinctive sound. The combination of sounds, which produce a man's cord, is his true occult name. This must not be confused with the hidden name of the orgiades, which is the cord of the three principles of the ego, produced by the vibrations of the atoms of Ma, Buddhi and Manas, and the monad behind them. Page 177, Chapter 31, Initiation, page 267, In the astral body and the mental body, the subject of discipleship was dealt with, so far as it concerns the astral and mental bodies of the disciple, or pupil, of a master.